It's Politics with Amy Walter on The Takeaway. Setting aside the drama at the presidential level, there are plenty of transitions that are happening in Washington. On Thursday, newly elected members of Congress came to Capitol Hill for freshman orientation. While the polls suggested big gains for Democrats in the House, the party actually lost ground, at least 8 seats and maybe more, leaving Democrats with the slimmest of majorities. That's led to lots of finger-pointing among House Democrats about who or what is to blame for their poor showing. Many moderates argue that the push by progressives on issues like Medicare for All and police reform cost them seats in more conservative districts. I had the opportunity to talk to two incoming Democratic freshmen about their expectations for their new job and this disconnect between the more moderate and progressive wings of the party. First up,
my name is Mondaire Jones, Congressman-elect. This is the first time I'm going to be saying this, man. This is kind of cool. My name is Mondaire Jones, representative-elect from New York's 17th Congressional District.
New York's 17th Congressional District is home to some of the ritzier zip codes in the country. It also has some rather famous constituents like Bill and Hillary Clinton. But that's not the whole story.
When I was on the campaign trail, I described New York's 17th Congressional District as like a tale of two cities. Obviously, it is one of the more affluent congressional districts in the United States. But as the New York Times said in its endorsement of my campaign, there are also pockets of deep poverty, like where I grew up, in the village of Spring Valley, for example, a working class community where I was raised in Section 8 housing and on food stamps. And there are many places throughout New York's 17th Congressional District like Spring Valley. And of course, many, many people are defined as housing burdened, meaning they spend more than 30% of their monthly income towards housing expenses. We are no stranger to the devastating effects of climate change, especially in our river towns. And we are familiar with ICE raids all throughout New York's 17th Congressional District. And so we've got our share of challenges. And I'm really excited to be on the cusp of providing representation to all parts of New York's 17th Congressional District, not just the affluent portions.
Yeah. So tell me how that works, because, again, I think that many members of the affluent part of your district consider themselves to be progressive or progressive minded. But when the rubber hits the road, how open do you think this district's going to be to understanding the needs of the others that don't exactly look like them?
I think demonstrably, this district is already quite understanding of the fact that government must work for everyone, not just a subset of the American population. It's why I have found so much success in my own run for Congress. Someone who did not shy away from fighting for the big structural changes to meet our greatest challenges. And I have been rewarded at the ballot box because of that message. People are ready.
I want to pick up on that, people are ready, because we've been hearing reports from within the House Democratic Caucus, from some incumbent members, especially those in sort of swing suburban districts, who say, you know what, the message that progressives were putting forward on things like defunding the police or democratic socialism argument really hurt us. This is what the moderate members are saying. And there's no way Democrats can hold the House while also pushing through an agenda that many members of the Progressive Caucus would like to see done. So tell us, you're a new member, so you don't know, maybe you know some of these people, but you don't have relationships yet with your caucus. But what are your expectations as you come in about balancing that? And again, what are you going to say to more moderate members of the Democratic caucus who say, you know what? No, my district isn't ready for the kind of structural change that you say that yours are ready for.
My expectation is that we will have a data-driven conversation about why we lost House seats this cycle when we should have grown our majority. One observation that many people, including myself, have made is that all of the candidates in swing districts running on a platform of Medicare for All were reelected in their respective swing districts. Katie Porter, Mr. Golden in Maine, and others. And so it cannot be, as at least one person suggested, that running on big structural changes that meet the moment, especially in a context where a majority of the American people support Medicare for All in the midst of a global pandemic, is somehow fatal to one's electoral prospects. I think that, you know, defunding the police is a separate conversation. And so we need to really look at the data on that. But the most important piece I want everyone to take away with is that no one ran on defunding the police. No one running for Congress ran on defunding the police. I certainly didn't hear anyone say that. I didn't say it. And so it's really important that we have a nuanced conversation when cool heads can prevail. And I'm looking forward to participating in that and to bridging the ideological divides that sometimes make the headlines, but in actuality are not really as divisive as I think the media wants to portray within the caucus.
You had said, I'm going to read something, a quote that you gave to Politico, where you said that you were, quote, laser focused on what the Justice Department under Biden looks like, and warned against appointing Republicans to key positions. Can you talk about what that means to you to be laser focused on that, and then what it means when you say, I don't want to see Republicans appointed to key positions? I assume you mean like in the cabinet, things like that.
That's right, Amy. This is nothing personal. I just think in a context where Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have more than a 5 million vote margin of victory, and where the entire leadership within the Republican Party just spent the past 4 years enabling a white supremacist president who is hostile to democracy itself and continues to show himself to be so, after Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's clear victory, that we ought to be using our mandate to appoint people who actually care about having an economy that works for everyday Americans, and having a Department of Justice where I used to work, and this is personal to me for a number of reasons, not just because I'm an attorney, but because I'm Black and I'm openly gay. And so, you know, we look to, you know, communities like the ones I represent and that I come from, look to the Civil Rights Division, for example, at the Department of Justice to actually vindicate the civil rights and civil liberties of all Americans without favor. And so we have to make sure that we are governing in a way that reflects the mandate that we now have going into 2021.
So you believe that you all were elected with a mandate, despite the fact that you lost seats, that Democrats lost seats in the House, did not make gains in state legislatures, we're still waiting to see control of the Senate. But this was not a dramatic repudiation of Republicans in this election.
It is a mandate. It is not the kind of dramatic repudiation that you just described and that I and so many others had hoped for. And that's a separate conversation about what we need to do within the party to turn out our base the way that Donald Trump was able to turn out his base this election. You know, there are a lot of folks who were saying they were undecided in polls, who I do not believe were actually undecided, but felt like maybe they were too embarrassed to say who they were going to vote for. And then, of course, there were still a lot of people, in fact, most Americans, who still did not vote in this presidential election. So how do we expand the electorate? How do we focus on folks who feel like our candidates may not be speaking to their economic concerns, or who really appreciate what it's like to be a marginalized member of our society? And I'm so grateful to, you know, communities of color and young people all throughout this country, but in particular places like Georgia and Arizona and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, who really got the job done in the final hour.
You are going to be the first openly gay Black man to be representing your district, but also you and Congressman-elect Richie Torres as the two ever elected to Congress. Can you reflect on that for a minute?
Yeah. You know, Richie and I will be the first openly gay Black members of Congress. And that is something that, frankly, I never imagined when I was growing up. I did not think that someone like me could run for Congress, let alone get elected. And had I been able to see someone like myself in Congress growing up, it would have been direct evidence of the fact that life really does get better as you grow older and you come into your own. I spent much of my life thinking that there were entire professions closed off to me, including politics, because if I were to run for office, I would have to run as an openly gay candidate and people would reject that out of hand. And so I'm really excited whenever I get a message, as I often do, from people all throughout my district and all throughout this country, young and old, who are saying that my candidacy is helping them to accept who they are and to live authentic lives. And of course, it is important for me and to so many others, including Richie, I think, to use our lived experiences to inform the policymaking discussions. The experience of queer people of color is an intersectional experience. And to the extent that LGBTQ people have certain challenges, whether it's accessing necessary medical care, life-saving care, homelessness, especially if you're a young queer person, and so on and so forth, that challenge is compounded when you're a person of color. And I look forward to bringing that perspective into Washington as well.
Well, Congressman-elect, I really appreciate you taking the time. Good luck getting yourself settled in your new job, and we hope to talk with you soon.
Likewise. Thanks for the opportunity.
Mondaire Jones is the Congressman-elect in New York's 17th Congressional District.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing.
Or politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.